Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to be talking about success power. Now, all of us may have dreams or visions of what we would like to accomplish. So frequently it's forgotten. It takes a lot of hard work, persistence, and determination to achieve what we want. There's no instant add water mix and you've got it formula. At least I haven't found it so far. Doesn't mean it couldn't be possible, but that hasn't been my experience at all. And my guest today, Trevor Blake, has put together, you might say, a formula of knowledge that can empower you as an individual, both in your personal life, your private life, and in your business life, in a way that is going to, I think, make you feel like you have a little bit more oomph over what life may dish you up and how you should not give up your dreams. Trevor Blake, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Appreciate it.
Now, you're a man. You're located up here in the Pacific Northwest, which is just, I think, God's country.
Yes,
and
I do, too. It's beautiful.
You have a fascinating background. You are originally from Wales, and you were in the Royal Navy. You worked in the corporate environment and then decided to develop a business, and you sold that business for more than $100 million during a recession. And I'm sure anybody listening to this would say, oh, yeah. Sure. With all of the negative stuff that's being thrown out in media. But you felt, Blake, that there was a reason that you were able to achieve this success. Is that why you wanted to put this book together?
Yeah, that's the main reason. I'm also, this book is, you know, Three Simple Steps would be considered a self-help book. But I'm not a big fan of the self-help movement, particularly because so many of those books have been written by people whose only taste of success has come after they've written a book that catches on. So I've always felt, although the information might be useful, they sometimes lack credibility. So I held off writing this book until I felt I had qualified to stand up and talk about what it takes to achieve the American dream. So what you talked about is quite correct. I started a company in 2002 for a few hundred dollars and sold it for $105 million in 2010. I started a second company in 2005 and sold it for three times that in 2011.
Wow. Listening to just those few words, one might say, I wonder if it's possible for anybody else. Tell us what your businesses were and how it was that you decided you were going to become an entrepreneur. And also, how did you get to the United States since you had been born and raised in Wales?
Right. Well, I mean, we could go back to the beginning, and I actually started out in Liverpool, and before I came to America, I used to sound more like a Beatle than I do today, but nobody could understand what I was saying, so I've learned to sort of slow my voice down and talk a little bit clearer than I used to.
But, okay.
I used to talk a bit more like John Lennon, you know, that nasally sound. But we grew up poor because I'd been evicted, my family had been evicted three times before I was seven, and that's how we ended up in Wales, because back in those days, in the late 60s, it was possible to put all your belongings in the back of a truck and then head to the hills and escape your creditors. Probably not as possible today because we're tracked everywhere we go, but in those days that was possible. And that's why we ended up in Wales, and we lived in a derelict farmhouse, the only people who lived in that farmhouse for probably 200 years. It was really, for me, like falling into the pages of the Chronicles of Narnia. It was just a fantastic adventure, but it must have been so stressful and difficult for my parents. And then on top of that, when I was eight, my mother was given 6 months to live, and I was there when she told the doctors that wasn't long enough. She said, I'm not leaving until my children are fully grown and have left the nest. And so I got to experience two things. One, that strange upbringing, but two, what happens when somebody develops an unshakable belief in their future? And that was the lesson I got from my real-life hero, which was my mother. And she was a woman of her word. You know, she lived through another 14 years of debilitating treatments and chronic pain and absolutely refused to give up until all her three children had grown up and were successfully taken care of. And that inspired me, and I've used that lesson throughout my life. And on her deathbed, she made me promise that I would take these lessons to heart and do something with my life. And so I've tried to do that. I've tried to honor that that request. And I used the information in three simple steps. I used it first to get out of that poverty. And then when that was successful, I used it for a life of adventure and travel, because being poor, we'd never traveled anywhere. But I was fascinated when I looked at travel magazines and TV shows about travel. And so I traveled all over the world with the Royal Navy, and then after the Royal Navy in business, to 56 different countries, and I've lived and worked in several of them. And then a funny thing happens. I got to 40 years old, and a weird thing happens to men at 40 years old. You know, you go to bed on the night of your 39th birthday feeling fit, and then you wake up the next morning looking 6 months pregnant and feeling somewhat vulnerable. So then I turned the three simple steps to taking care of my financial independence, and that's when I started my first company.
Well, let's talk a little bit. Let's backstep just a little bit, because you were determined to make changes. There wasn't anybody around you that was, other than your mother. Your mother was really quite an incredible woman, because she made the statement nobody was going to tell her when she was going to die, period. That was it. She reminds me of a friend of mine who's always negotiating with God, saying, not today, thank you very much. I got other things to do. You got to listen to me. I mean, your mother had this strength of determination and character, and her world really was dedicated to letting you kids know that you could do things. Although, when you decided you wanted to go into the Royal Navy, there is a caste system that is very much in place. Am I correct? From the material that I read, it was, to me, there is this almost like an invisible caste system, but not so. And you really overcame that. Tell us your story about getting into the Royal Navy, because very, very few people, it's like getting into the SEALs. Not everybody's going to cut it.
No, and it's a quite an elitist setup in the UK. It may have changed a little bit over the years, but it still very much is a class society, a class structured society. And if you're, you know, my accent here in America doesn't, you know, most people can't tell the difference in English accents, most people I meet. But my accent identifies me in England as working class. And unfortunately, that pretty much determines how your life is going to map out in the United Kingdom. I did decide when I was younger that I didn't want to turn out like my father. And that's not to criticize my father. It's just that the pattern of his life was one of continuous failure, and he sort of gave up on life. And he was, I know he struggled mentally with the fact that he thought his wife was about to die and he was going to have to bring up three children on his own. And so he basically gave up. He sat in a chair and read library books for the next 14 years. And I knew that we were very similar character-wise, and I didn't want to turn out like that. So I made a decision to do something with my life, and I wanted to travel. So I decided to join the Royal Navy, but I decided to join the Royal Navy's Officer Academy, and everybody laughed at me. I mean, my careers teacher at school told me to give up on that idea. You know, that's not for people of my class, and that I should instead apply for an apprenticeship at a chicken packing factory down the road. Seriously, you know. So my other teachers said things like, well, you know, it's fine to have ambition, but hope you won't be setting yourself up to be disappointed. And even all my family and friends, other than my mother, you know, were fearful that I was making a fool of myself. But I was determined to make that happen. And in those days, it was such an elitist academy that most of Britain's future politicians and business leaders came from there. And so they were pretty picky. But I decided to put myself forward for it. My mother supported me, and we didn't have a vehicle, so we traveled by bus to the nearest recruitment office, which is about 40 miles away, and about six or seven bus journeys. And I remember it, you know, distinctly when I walked through the door, and the recruitment officer was there in his fantastic uniform, and he looked about 10 foot tall to me. He even had a sword by his side. And he looked down at me, and he saw my shabby clothes, and he saw the way my mother was dressed, and the fact that she was walking with a crutch. You know, the cancer had traveled to her bones by that point, the bones in the legs. And he looked down his nose, and he said, you know, I don't want to prejudge this young man, but we do have high standards. And it sort of hit me in the stomach like a solar punch. And I was ready to turn around and walk out, but my mother was infuriated. So she put her hand on my shoulder and basically thrust me into the chair and demanded to get an application form. And that's how it all started. And from that point on, somehow, I just worked hard and you know, behaved well and passed all the exams and all the tests to get in. And the Navy tried their hardest not to let me in, but eventually I did get to that academy. And with 120 other people, got through all of that training over 18 months. And only five of us graduated out of that 120. But I was very proud to have graduated, and my mother was there for my graduation, which was fantastic.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. So here you are. You are actually interacting with royalty, people of the upper class, if you will. Your whole life has changed because you are going to be able to travel around the world. You're in an environment that no one in your family has ever had the privilege of even experiencing. You weren't in America at the time, but you were experiencing what people in America would say, wow, that is the American dream, but it's in English style. And I think any story like this is extremely powerful because it talks about the mental attitude, both on the part of yourself as well as your mother, who just said, wait a minute, his brain is as good as anybody else's. If this is what he wants, then I'm going to be supportive. That's so powerful. That's so very powerful. What brought you to the United States?
Well, my wife, actually. One of the last things my mother did on Earth was I took her to her chemotherapy treatment at the hospital in Liverpool. Actually, we drove all the way from Wales to Liverpool for her chemotherapy. It was about a 60-mile drive in those days, and that was a long way back then. And she introduced me to her favorite chemotherapy nurse, and I stood by the door, and the two of them gave each other huge hugs, and they obviously knew each other very well and had developed a tremendous relationship, but I was just smitten. I was just stunned. So I fell in love with the chemotherapy nurse, and I'm very proud to say that I'm still in love with the chemotherapy nurse, and she lights up my life every time she steps in the room 30 years later, which is great. So if anyone listening thinks that love at first sight is something you find only in books and movies, I can tell you that's not true at all. It's very much real. So it was always her desire to come to the United States, and she I don't know why, it just was built in her that as a young girl she just was fascinated by everything American, and I have to be honest and say I wasn't. I hadn't really given it any thought. I had a successful career in England at that time, and obviously was very English. Going into the military, you become quite patriotic about your country. But we came to a situation where she became very ill, and as a result of that illness, found out that she wasn't able to have children. And so we sat around and thought about, you know, what do we do in this situation? And it's a situation that many of your listeners might be familiar with, and it can drive you a bit psychologically crazy, I think. But we decided to make it an advantage. So the fact that we weren't able to have kids, we thought, okay, now we're free to go anywhere we want and travel anywhere we want. So coming to America became a sort of goal for both of us. And I went to an immigration lawyer specialist, and he laughed at me and said, it's impossible because you're in sales and marketing now, and there's no shortage of sales and marketing people in America. And in those days, there was no shortage of nurses in America either. My wife was an oncology nurse. And so he said, don't bother. Give it up. Just stay with your jobs. And as soon as someone says that to me, it's usually like a red rag to a bull. So, you know, that makes me pretty determined to prove them wrong. So we set about making it happen, and here we are.
Well, it's phenomenal. I so appreciated a number of comments in your book, and I'm going to start off with the first one. You feel that here in the Western world that we have a national and cultural disease. It's called complaining. You feel like Americans in many ways have become a society of complainers. However, you say also, Americans are naturally outgoing and optimistic. Expectations are generally high. And you say the British have more of a very pessimistic outlook. And I thought, when I was reading this material, I said, this is a very interesting observation, because I feel you're correct. There are so many people that are talking and yammering about how bad things are, and they have never been outside of their neighborhood, much less traveling to other parts of the world to see what's really going on. And they believe all the hype that often is put through media. At the same time, Americans are noted to the astonishment of many people throughout the world, if there's a problem, let's see what we can do to fix it. Let's go after it. This is part of what I call the American spirit. And you make a comment, and I think it's perfectly appropriate for today, and I'm quoting from your book, "Americans are the only people who are genuinely surprised and disappointed when politicians do not keep their promises. In other countries, people are just relieved if their leaders get through their terms of office without being mired in a a sex scandal of some kind." And I had to laugh. I really had to laugh, because that also is true. Sometimes we have to get information from someone that's from the outside that can look at us with a broader screen of observation than we do, because we're part of the action of what's happening here. And you're right. Americans in general typically say, well, if we tighten up our financial belt, if we do what we have to do, I know, I'm of that disposition, you can get through just about anything. Life happens, but hey, let's just pull up our bootstraps here, tie them real tight, and let's get a move on. Stop sitting in your pity pot. I really, really appreciated your comments. I said, this is so valuable, your perspective, because instead of whining and complaining, you're a businessman, you've seen the ups and downs, you've enjoyed success, you've known what challenge is. You say, really look at what you have. Look at what you have the opportunity to experience that most of the people on this planet can't even fathom. And that in this country, we can do and be anything we want to be. Why should we complain? The American dream is alive and well. And how do you recommend we deal with the complainers that sit and cry in their mental beer on a regular basis?
Well, I think complaining isn't something that we should blame people for doing, as if they, you know, deliberately become a complainer. And in three simple steps, I've got quite a bit of neuroscience data. We live in a world now where we can see what happens in the brain when we expose the brain to certain outside stimuli. We can use functional MRI to see how the neurons are connecting, and it's fascinating stuff. And physics is my, you know, perpetual study, if you like. So it's really interesting to see data coming out of Harvard and Stanford in the last 3 years that shows the brain works more like a muscle than we ever realized. And so the more that you expose the brain to a particular attitude or behavior, the more it hardwires to that and eventually becomes that attitude and behavior unless you decide to change it. So, you know, if you find yourself surrounded by a bunch of complainers and you don't do anything about it, eventually you'll find yourself becoming a complainer as well. It's not your fault. It's the way the brain works. It hardwires to whatever it's exposed to. So being aware of that is important, but there's a more serious side to the complaining, and that's why I have it in the book. And that is that the latest studies show from Stanford that if you expose the brain to 30 minutes of stressors, and that could be complaining, or it could be sensationalist news headlines, or it could be reading bad news in the newspaper, but only 30 minutes a day, then you cause physical damage to the brain. First of all, you cause actual brain cell death because of the cortisol produced. But secondly, you peel back neurons in a part of the brain called the hippocampus, which is essential for problem solving and for adapting to changing circumstances, exactly the part of the brain you don't want to be damaging to live in the sort of world we live in today with so much noise around us and so much information. So I tend to think of complaining in the same way as I used to think of passive smoking. When I grew up, my father was a chain smoker, and you know, he'd be lighting up a cigarette on one side of his mouth while he still had the dying embers of another cigarette on the other side of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And in that chair he used to sit in, you know, the ceiling above him was just an orange circle of nicotine. That's how much smoking he did, and I knew intuitively that was bad for me. I couldn't change his habit, so I used to get myself out of that environment. It's the same with complaining. If you don't break that connection, and you can just, you know, if you're around complainers, you can just excuse yourself for 5 minutes and go to the bathroom or go get some fresh air. But if you don't break that connection, you will allow your brain to start to mimic that behavior and create a neural pathway that mimics what you're hearing around you, and you start to become that. And we see it all the time. You know, we see chronic complainers that are exhausting, but we also see people who walk into a door and have to immediately get their fix of Fox News or something like that, and that's because their brain is hardwired to that pattern of behavior. So I point that out in the book simply because in step one of three simple steps, the key is to find inside yourself again that pioneering spirit with which you were born, because we live in a world of consensus now, and we're very much influenced by other people's opinions and trends and fashions. And it's very hard to come up with a great idea that can make a difference between success and failure if you're making decisions based on consensus. So you have to get back to being an individual again, and I think that's the key first step. And so you, in order to do that, you've got to protect yourself from all this negativity around you, including complaining and knowing that it causes physical damage. I think makes it easier to take control of that, because your life is at stake. And you know, that's the first thing I learned when I was a kid. When we went to Wales, I found myself with a foreign accent, or an accent that other people identified as foreign, wearing shabby clothes, and it was a bit like having a target on my back. And so I was persecuted by bullies for quite a long period of time. And the one place my bullies couldn't go was the public library, and that's where I used to hide out. And that's where I first started to read biographies of self-made men and women. And what struck me with those historical heroes was their ability to build unshakable belief in what they wanted to do and who they wanted to be, despite all the negativity around them. And I wanted to build that for myself as well. And I had my real-life hero and my mother, as we were talking about earlier. So getting that sort of filtering out all that negativity is a critical first step to really being the person you're supposed to be, and that's why I talk about it. And the ultimate conclusion is the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So, you know, I've been in several countries, and I can tell anyone who's listening to this, there is no country in the world where someone like me, working class background, poor accent, shabby clothes, with no identifiable skill or talent, with no family connections, and very average state-sponsored schooling, could decide to start a company, and then just with hard work and good integrity, build it up over 4 or 5 years and sell it for $100 million. There is nowhere in the world where that is possible. And so I get a little frustrated sometimes when I meet people who tell me all the reasons why the American dream is not attainable and it's dead. You know, I didn't get that message. I came over here believing in the American dream, and I think I've proved that it still exists and it's very much attainable to anybody.
I agree. And that's why I feel your book, Three Simple Steps, is worth its weight in gold and then some. Because we must nourish our thinking with right kinds of thought. We need to be selective. We need to be aware of our words. We need to be aware of how we use our words. Someone said to me, my goodness, so many years ago, words have power, and the universe can't take a joke. And if you declare your word, I am always struggling all the time, then that is going to be experienced by you. But if you shift your word saying, maybe at this moment this is where I am, but I may not be there tomorrow, or this is where I am temporarily, I'm planning on being in another locale or doing something else, but shifting, then there is this invisible magic, I call it, where suddenly you find yourself in the right place with the right people, with the right situations, and it's not so suddenly in many instances. Sometimes it's just circumstances. You didn't achieve your capabilities overnight. You had to go through a lot of various learning levels, and you made your choices, and those choices empowered you then to experience success that others would probably have just slam-dunked you for even thinking about. And that is part of the American story, because we literally have millions of people that are doing that every single day. They're proving that the doubting Thomases are wrong. One of the things that you bring out in your book, there's a statement here, and I found it very powerful. To succeed, all propaganda has to be popular and has to accommodate itself to the comprehension of the least intelligent of those whom it seeks to reach. Now, those are powerful words, and those were stated by Adolf Hitler that ended up creating such devastation. And you have a very good section on this, on how with lies and all kinds of phony images, and we get pummeled with them every day. So you say you've got to reach for a better image. Don't read the garbage at the checkout counter at the grocery store, and start being mindful of what is going on around you. Realize there's a lot of good stuff happening. I agree with you 100%.
The challenge is that the good stuff doesn't usually make noise and doesn't stop people in their tracks. That's part of the challenge we face with so much noise around us today. So, I mean, who can really resist, you know, seeing a forest fire on the TV, or or a car chase us. It's, you know, and the reason that all those things are all around us is because fear paralyzes, and that's the way that advertisers can hold your attention long enough for them to be able to throw a commercial at you. And there's nothing, I don't think there's anything inherently evil about all of that. I just think it's the world we live in. But being aware of it is so important, because if you're living the life of your dreams and you're really happy, then it doesn't matter what you see or hear. It's irrelevant. But if you're not, then you have to change something, and you have to look into your life and say, well, what is it that I need to change in order to get out of this quicksand that I find myself in? One of the things I learned early on in life, you know, being in Wales, which was a very rural area, and running away from the passive smoking, being out in nature, was that everything is energy. Absolutely everything around us is energy, and we are energy, and our thoughts are energy, and our words are energy. And it sort of came to me, reading the life stories of people like Henry Ford and Andrew Carnegie, Samuel Colt, Madam C.J. Walker. They were inspirational to me, because here were really successful business people who understood that everything in life was energy, and that you have to be extremely careful with the words you use and the thoughts you have, because those are also energy. And the only thing, they came to these conclusions even before the basic laws of physics were understood by anybody. Now, we live in a world where we know the basic laws of physics, but for some reason, we seem to think the laws of physics apply to nature around us, but not to us ourselves. And in business, I've always tried to apply the laws of physics to my business, so that my every communication with a customer or with a colleague is a form of energy. And I have to be very diligent about how I use that energy, because I can cause great damage, or I can cause great growth and good. And so, you know, in Three Simple Steps, I point out the fact that I'm not a fan of self-help movement. I'm not a fan of positive thinking, because I think it's an illusion. And the reason I think it's an illusion is that our thoughts are always instantaneous. So if you see something on TV, or you read something in the newspaper, or you overhear a colleague saying something unkind about you in the distance, your thought is instantaneous, hardwired, and negative. And there's nothing you can do about that. You don't have time to stop the thought. But what you do have control over is how you react to that thought. And this becomes very important. So you can have an immediate negative thought, and then you can slow yourself down, take a deep breath, and you can have a better reaction to that thought. And that's important when you're watching TV. It's important when you're around complainers, and it's important if you want to change your life. So I use a few examples. For instance, you know, like many people, most people are up to their eyeballs in credit card debt, and they'll be watching their favorite sport on TV, and then there's no warning. Suddenly there's an advertisement or a commercial for a credit card debt solution. Well, your immediate thought is one of fear and paralysis, because you're in credit card debt, and you have all these immediate thoughts. Why have I done this to myself? How am I going to get out of this? Why did I buy that stupid piece of clothing when I couldn't afford it? You have all of those immediate negative thoughts, and you beat yourself up. But then if you know you can control your reaction, you would stop and take a pause, and then you would say something to yourself like, when I have paid off all my credit card debt, I will celebrate by buying a bottle of champagne, and I'll pay cash for it. And although that's not your reality right now, if you do that often enough, very soon you'll find yourself out of credit card debt and able to buy a bottle of champagne. I did that very same thing for myself once. I went out and bought a bottle of champagne, and unfortunately my mother-in-law, who I've known for 30 years, loves champagne, so I didn't get to drink it myself, but I did get to buy it.
Oh, I love that. I absolutely love that. Well, I know we're just about out of time. Your book is absolutely a wonderful read. Your personal story that goes into enabling you to discover your own individuality, getting past barriers that for many are afraid, even today. I mean, there's always going to be challenges. I don't care where you are. There's always going to be a challenge somewhere. But it is recognizing that uniqueness that you have within yourself, and then being willing to take the dare, being willing to do change, and being willing to take responsibility. You have a marvelous, marvelous section on setting intentions, discipline, and I just think anybody that would get your book, I wouldn't care if they were a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, to even sharing this with kids in high school. I think that just about anybody could benefit from your very down-to-earth, very heartwarming, real stories and the understandings that you have, because I agree with you, everything is energy. But sometimes we have to wake up, and a lot of people stay asleep because they're afraid if they open their eyes, awakening to what their potentiality is, It's going to create change they don't know what to do with. And your book, Three Simple Steps, goes a long way to eradicating what I feel are our three greatest enemies, fear, ignorance, and superstition. I compliment you. Your book is excellent, Trevor Blake. Now, what is your website if people want to find out about your book?
It's threesimplesteps.com, and you can go through a portal on threesimplesteps.com to anyone who sells books. It's available everywhere. It's actually number 5 on the New York Times advice section this week, which is very exciting. That's a tremendous start because it was only published a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I think it's great.
And just to, you know, I wanted this to be an authentic self-help book, and there are so few of those out there, I'm afraid. You know, by writing it after I'd actually, you know, my only advantage in life is using these three steps, so that's authentic. But my profits also go to cancer research and development, because for me it was important to add that authenticity. I don't need the book to sell well. I just hope it's useful to people.
I understand. And the stories about the women that you've loved and you love, your wonderful wife, they've gone through this experience. So I think it's marvelous that the proceeds will benefit that. Check it out, those of you listening. Three Simple Steps. Add this book to your library. Take it to bed with you. Before you go to sleep, read a chapter. Feed your mind with as much thought as you want to feed your body. They both have to work in harmony. But if you don't put the right stuff in your head, you're going to end up with garbage. There's an old saying, garbage in, garbage out. It makes a difference in your life. This is Donna Sebo. Again, I want to thank Trevor Blake for being my guest. We're taking a break in just a moment. Check out threesimplesteps.com. We're going to be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. Awaken to Love, Gifts from Spirit. For those of you in Washington State, an incredible event is happening on September 15th at the Roosevelt Hotel in Seattle. This is a fundraiser for the Ascension Foundation's healing and educational programs. You're going to be able to experience messages from loved ones, have your fingerprints analyzed, and watch internationally renowned apport medium Michael Shane. He's going to be demonstrating his amazing skills of materializing objects, this and much more, including a silent auction and wine tasting that you're going to be able to enjoy. Tickets are $75 per person. To pre-register or for more details, you can call 800-508-6437. If you'd like to email information@michaelshane.com, that's MYCHAELSHANE.com. Also check out his website, michaelshane.com. This is a one-of-a-kind event that you're not going to want to miss, September the 15th. Put it on your calendar. Donna Sebo here again. Telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008. If you are a first-time listener, I'm so pleased that you've been able to join us today. And what I do is light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. All you have to do is give me your first name or your initial. I'll give you information about yourself. And then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. There was a special event in the year of 1210. It was during the reign of King John Lackland of England. Gervase of Tilbury, that was his title. Now, he was described as a traveling monk and a canon lawyer. And he, when he was traveling, and this was in the 1200s, he began writing a work that was the early Latin encyclopedia of wonders for the instruction and entertainment of his patron, Otto IV, the Holy Roman Emperor. These records still exist. Now, the book was divided into three sections, history, geography, and physics. And in this record book, the following incident was described. A sailor from Bristol was setting out from this very busy merchant port. He was sailing for Ireland. And, of course, after that, he was going to be going to other ports. That was the life of a working sailor. Wife and children, they were left behind, of course. That was not an uncommon story. The voyage was going to be a very long one, and this one sailor one day sat down for a meal with his crewmates and then went to the side of the ship to wash the knife that he was eating with. Now, while he was leaning over the side of the ship, this blade fell out of his hand, went into the water. At exactly the same moment in Bristol, this sailor's wife was sitting at her kitchen table when his knife, now he was thousands of miles away, this fell in the water, when his knife fell through a dormer window and stuck into the surface in front of her. She immediately knew it was her husband's knife. She put it aside. Where it had materialized from, she had no idea. But she knew he was going to come home. When he finally got home from his long journey, they made notes and compared information. They found that the incidents had occurred simultaneously. Now, in 1956, that's right, we're moving from the 1200s, coming up into 1956, in the Gloucestershire area, there was a report of a gentleman. He was called Mr. G. He was a lineman who worked for a company called Midland Electricity. He was working on some power lines, erecting them, in a field 4 miles from town. Lunchtime. Okay, he's going to eat. So he's like a lot of working guys. He pulls out his bread sandwich and cheese. And, oh my goodness, he realized he forgot his knife. How was he going to cut his sandwich? He bent down, and there in front of him, he sees on the grass in the field a brand new table knife, and it hadn't been there before. Mr. G took the knife home, where it remained in the hutch of the family home for years. Interestingly enough, when Mr. G died, the knife disappeared. Materialization. It happens sometimes in the most unusual way. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number to call in to is 530-413. Whoops, wrong number. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And by the way, for those of you that are waiting for my newsletter, it has been posted up on my website, and you'll be getting it if you've signed up to get it in your mailbox, your own personal copy. We have had some kind of a glitch with our computer system, and so it's going to be maybe a day or two before we're going to be able to find out what it is that's causing interference with coding. There is something that's been changed in coding with a certain company that we were not aware of, and so it's caused it to make it impossible to send anything out at this moment. So we're going to get that cleared up today. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about emotional eating. Jennifer Tice is going to be my guest. This is an issue I think so many people have dealt with. We all know about those that have bulimia and other forms of eating disorders, but how strongly does the emotional nature relate to this? Have you ever been so stressed that maybe there was a plate of brownies in front of you and all of a sudden they were gone? You go, what happened to them? And you realize that you ate them all? That's emotional eating. And this can happen so easily and so readily. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. And then Daniel Mendez, a very successful businessman, has put together a publication called Equilibrium. The man has enjoyed success, but he feels that spiritual principles are extremely important in business and in working with people. And he is in Mexico. We are going to be talking with him on Thursday. And then for those of you that love your coffee, you are going to very much enjoy my guest, Cal Ori, the healing power of coffee. She's going to be with me on Friday. This woman goes in for all kinds of research. She's just a doll. But we hear so much information, wrong information about coffee. And coffee has been around for millennia. Why is it beneficial? Why is it so significant in life? And what are its powerful benefits? Well, Cal Ori is going to be able to give that information to us and much, much more. So that's going to be coming up, and we'll have just such a wonderful array of people, as we always do on the Donna Siebel Show. So be sure to tell your friends about the show and join us and listen to the stories that people tell. I wanted to talk for a moment about a very special man. This is a man that became beloved around the world. Why? Because he was a tender of animals, a veterinarian. His name is Dr. James Rester. He's very quiet, very, very shy. And he had a tendency to mumble. People loved him, though. His animal patients, well, to them, he was like a Dr. Doolittle. He understood animals. The people that brought him their pets, they just ended up creating a legend about him. He lived in a very rural area called Brown County. This is a man that no matter what creature was brought to him, or whatever creature he went to tend, any place, anywhere in his environment, he never gave up on him. He always felt there was a way of working with him, even if the owner of said animal felt the case was hopeless. He took on all kinds of patients. There was a favorite story about him chasing after a runaway llama because he was trying to give the llama a shot to help it get well. He caught up with it. The animal got the shot. But there were so many stories. People couldn't even keep count of the stories of his thoughtfulness, his compassion, his kindness. Do you know his patient list was over 32,000? Over that. Nobody really knows how many more. He lived very simply. He loves his work, hates to charge for it, but has to. This man you may not recognize, but I bet you will when you hear the name James Harriet. There was a series of programs that were made about this man and his legendary veterinarian practice. He loved animals. He left an imprint called All Creatures Great and Small. He left a tremendous imprint on the minds of people of all ages, and it still resonates today. He has passed away, but what made him so very special was the reputation that he built because of his caring and his never giving up on those that he loved, the animals that he cared for. And I think his story applies to just about every level of life. Sometimes our greatest achievements are those that benefit others. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, those phone lines are open, 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Phone lines are open if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Light it up with that, 888-627-6008. George Bernard Shaw said, life isn't about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself. I think my guest today gave a good demonstration of that. Back to school. Oh, yes, everybody's buzzing about. I know the police officers in our little community, they're just happy as clams when you exceed the speed limit. So watch those signs. And when you see the blinking yellow light, slow down. Because they are happy to hand you a ticket. I'll tell you, in our particular environment, your ticket will be, for speeding in a school zone, a hefty $250. That's a big ouch. So be prepared, be alert, be aware. You don't need to support your local police department with those funds. Support yourself in another way, but not that way. So just slow down. How can we help the kids? What can we do to, well, make them enthusiastic about learning? I think that that's something that really is so important. The joy of learning, the joy of being able to grow and develop and become aware of bigger and better worlds and opportunities. One of the tools to use, and I am in favor of this, as long as it doesn't become excessive, is video games. And there are so many I just am overwhelmed. When I've been in New York and I have gone into one of the biggest toy stores in the world, and I go into the educational department, I am just flabbergasted at what is available for teaching young children with music, having them learn their math and their spelling and all kinds of things. And I thought, boy, this is really fun. It just makes a tremendous difference. You don't need to get them any of the knock down, drag them out, kill them, and destroy the world type of games. But video games are a marvelous way of engaging the brain. And many times, kids that might be diagnosed or labeled, let me say labeled, with an ADHD tag or something else that you've come up with, the video games engage the brain. Now, they also need good physical activity to balance the mental activity they're going through, but those video games really can promote learning if you work with them wisely and well. And it's, believe it or not, they find it works with adults too, that it really helps the brain coordinate, causes the brain to get exercise, which is something that is needed. So kids, you want to be sure that you, if you're going to work with them earlier in the day, working with the video games is actually better than later in the day, but it is going to do wonderful things for you. Also, as I said, exercise. Kids need to be able to get out and to play. It is natural for them. They've got this phenomenal amount of energy to want to run, climb trees, do all kinds of stuff that's going to keep them busy. I'll never forget a mom that I was speaking with one day, and she had this three-year-old. This kid was giving her so many challenges, and he's just 3 years old, but this is an extremely intelligent child. So we talked. I said, look, it may be inconvenient for you, but get him involved in swimming, get him involved in this, that, or the other. What you need to understand is that you've got such a bright kid here that the physical exercise is going to give him the outlet. It's going to be a healthy way for him to have that outlet, and then give the mental stimulus by reading to him and all these things. And, of course, mom was so concerned. This is her little baby. This is her little boy. I said, he's not going to be that way for very long. So encourage the physical activity. Do you know, I saw her the other day, and in the past 2 years, this kid has gone in for martial arts. He's engaged in sports. He's 6 years old. His scholastic level is off the charts, and she's always taking him from one point to another. She said he is just phenomenal, but he's better behaved, he sleeps better at night, and he is engaged. He's engaged, and she even brings him around environments where there are older people. And so he's learning how to be courteous, how to be thoughtful, how to say please, thank you, you know, social graces. He's learning things like this, and he's just 6 years of age. So it's an amazing thing, and that's what we need to remember. And, of course, you need to make sure that the kids have more water than soda pop. I think one of the things that distresses me is that so many adults, I see them just letting these little kids drink soda pop, and this is my bias. And what it is just concentrated sugar. The diet pops are even worse because of the chemical that they're introducing into a youngster's body. Give them real stuff. Give them water. They don't need to have flavored water, just regular water. Fruit juices. Make your own juices at home. Have you ever had freshly made apple juice? Oh, here in the Pacific Northwest, apples are one of our great crops. And if ever you put a fresh apple through a juicer, the flavor is out of this world. And that's what we need to remember. That's what children need to have. They need to have those fresh foods because their bodies are growing and their bodies will thrive on healthy food. And one of the things we need to remember with kids is let them fail. It's okay. They need to fall down. They need to scrape their knees. They need to know that not everything is going to be perfect in life, because there's when they turn 18, there's no magic wand that's going to show them that life is tough out there. So why not let them learn through the school of hard knocks in a safe environment? It's important. It's important to say, okay, if this didn't work out, let me try something else. That very essence that defines the American spirit. I wanted to also mention, if you've ever wanted to be in an environment with people with unique psychic abilities, the special event that's taking place on September 15th at the Roosevelt Hotel in Seattle, Washington, is going to give you an opportunity to experience the unusual firsthand. Michael Shane, an internationally renowned apportation medium, along with Shauna Touche and Monty Burgess, are going to be demonstrating their individual talents and answering questions you might have. Now, there's also going to be a silent and live auction, wine tasting, and a lot more that you're going to be able to enjoy. And this is a fundraising event for the healing and educational programs of the Ascension Foundation. So you can awaken to love and experience the gifts from spirit. Cost per person, $75 to pre-register. Want more details? Call 800-508-6437. Email info at michaelshane.com or visit michaelshane.com. This is a one-of-a-kind event you won't want to miss. Give them a call, 800-508-6437. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, we're already out of time. The hour just goes by like the wind. I want you to remember always you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. If my guest today, Trevor Blake, can inspire you with anything else, it's that nothing is impossible. You can achieve a dream of your own, whatever that might be, because it is your dream, not somebody else's. Life is meant to be lived. It is not meant for you to just exist. So open yourself up to the opportunity of challenge. If you have a lot of talents, choose the one that is so strong for you above all others. Focus on that, and then get yourself in an environment that's going to support that talent. So it will grow and it will expand, and you'll discover new worlds you had never known were possible. Join me tomorrow, right here, same time, same place. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted we've been able to share this time. Look forward to chatting with you again. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.